It was the boy sitting next to me in the hologram room. I remember how then I'd thought that he looked like my brother when he was around 15. I was finally able to help Neri Ida calm down. She explained how she came to live that experience. Her husband and she belong to a particular religious group which I'll not mention here. They have a 7-year-old son whom we'll call Luisito. Their humble little house is a little isolated from the rest of the neighbors. This woman, who was wearing no makeup and had on long clothing, has few friends outside of her religious circle. Besides other family members, the only person outside of her group from church that she was friends with was a woman who took care of Luisito while she worked as a housekeeper in the home of some wealthy people. This lady who took care of Luisito was the one who got Neri Ida to me. She told me that the picture appeared in her purse around 3 or 4 years ago. She was looking for a medical prescription for her husband when she found the photo in one of the pockets of the purse. She looked at it and recognized herself among the people in the picture. She had no idea of how she came to be with those strangers. She didn't even own a camera. She never showed the picture to her husband or anyone else for that matter. This picture tortured her constantly, up to the point where she started to think she may have been suffering from some kind of amnesia. One day she went to pick Luisito up at the house of the lady that took care of him as usual. While picking up his things, she noticed a magazine that was on her friend's bed. She took the magazine in her hands and recognized the face on the cover. It was one of the people in her picture. The heading read, "Something like kidnapped by extraterrestrials or something." She then became even more confused. The nanny was very surprised when she asked to borrow the magazine. She knew she had to show her husband but feared what might happen. She thought he wouldn't understand. He would have probably said that Satan was responsible for everything and thought she was crazy for letting herself be possessed by the demon. Her conscience told her the picture was diabolical. Many times she thought destroying it, but she always stopped herself. She wanted a logical explanation for it. That night, while in church with her husband and son, she couldn't stop thinking about the picture and the magazine. She wasn't paying attention to the service. She still hadn't had time to read the article because she wanted to wait to be alone, so she decided to wait for her husband and son to be asleep to do it. When her family fell asleep, she carefully got out of bed to not wake her husband. She took her purse and headed to the bathroom through the dark house. She then locked herself in and turned on the light. Feeling as though she was going to look at some pornographic magazine, she took it out of the purse along with the enigmatic picture. In the photo, she found whom she was looking for. The person was between the young teenager who wore shorts and was barefoot and the man who was smiling and dressed in black. Yes, it was definitively the man in the magazine, she thought. With her hands shaking, she read the article. She couldn't believe what she was reading. It was all different from what she knew of reality. It can't be, she kept repeating herself. She thought that if in fact she was there, she would have remembered. But, what about the picture? I'm in it, she told herself. The man described in the article is also in the photo and dressed as specified, dressed in black, she also told herself. When she finished reading the article, she was crying, so got on her knees and prayed. She really just wanted to scream and shout like she'd really lost her mind, but she was able to contain herself. She didn't want to wake Luisito or her husband. After looking at the picture and the magazine one last time, she put them back in her purse and went back to bed. That night, all she did was ask God for wisdom and strength to handle the situation. By morning, she still hadn't been able to sleep. She didn't go to work and she stayed the whole day in bed. When she couldn't take it anymore, she confessed everything to her nanny. She told her to call the numbers on the magazine. From the nanny's house, she called the numbers in Carbirojo. The person she spoke with told her I was not accessible, that I didn't want to talk to anybody, and that anything they had to say to me they should tell that person. She didn't want to tell that person anything, so she hung up. Her nanny told her not to worry and that she wouldn't find out where to reach the person in the magazine. The nanny went to Carbirojo and asked friends and family for information. Everything pointed to a person in a hot dog stand called the Tamarindo. When the nanny found the place and asked me if I was that person, I courteously said that she was mistaken. Of course it's him, the nanny thought, so she went back and told Nereida. Nereida then went to the tamarindo but found no one there. She then asked some kids about the person who sold the hot dogs. They told her he had left early that day, but also told her where to find me. She then went to my little house but found no one. Later she came back and saw me sleeping in the hammock. She didn't want to wake me, so she decided to go to the restaurant and wait till I got up. I told Nereida and Luisito about the others, and that afternoon I'd left work early to look for Helena. I pointed out who Helena was in her own photograph. Before she left, she gave me her nanny's phone number. I could call her and let her know when we were all going to meet. She left me the picture as a present. That's how I was able to recognize the seventh person, Mr. Tono, before he identified himself. Chapter 16. Mr. Tono arrived the very next morning. He was an older gentleman, a little on the heavy side, and very cheerful. He had a tendency to speak loudly, as if one were deaf. I've grown accustomed to his tone though. He woke me up that morning with his thunder mouth. When I went outside, I immediately recognized him as one of the people in Nereida's picture. He began by saying, "Look, Sonny, you don't know who I am." I instantly started to like this guy, he was so joyful. Though I always wake up in a bad mood, after talking to him for a few minutes, my mood changed. He said, "Wake up, Sonny, I'm talking to you. Mr. Tono is also from Carbirojo. He told me he had gone to the tamarindo before all this started, and that when he passed by he always felt strange. He said he always got the feeling he knew me. Since he believed in reincarnation, he thought he probably knew me from another life. He me told that morning he was headed to Guaniquia, a neighborhood in Carbirojo, and when he saw my car parked outside he decided to stop. He said he had always wanted to talk to me about the whole UFO phenomenon, but since he had read in the article that I didn't want to talk to people who were just curious, he didn't want to bother me. However, somehow that morning he mustered up the courage to stop right in front of my house and call me out. I told him to wait while I grabbed the key to the gate. He said no to bother since he would only be there a few minutes to just satisfy his curiosity. I told him that was no problem. So tell me, was that flying saucer really big? Dash he asked. Don't you remember? Dash I replied, smiling. Yes, I remember, from the pictures shown on the television and in the magazine. No, what I meant to say was, Mr. Tono, don't you remember the size of the object when you saw it dot in person? What do you mean in person? Are you crazy? Mr. Tono, how can you say I'm crazy when you better than anyone know what I'm talking about? Sonny, how can you ask me if I don't remember the size of the saucer when I saw it in person? You don't really remember, Mr. Tono? Look, Amori, I'm a little old for you to treat me like a fool. I think you're being rude. If you didn't want to talk about the subject, you should have told me. I would have gotten in my car and left you alone. I told him he wasn't getting what I was saying. I told him I thought he remembered the experience and that was why he had come. Now you're really being rude, he said. This must be why Mr. B talks behind your back. He was about to get in his car when I shouted, "Look, I don't give a damn about what Mr. B says, but I want to show you something before you leave." He stayed by his car with the door open, and when I saw he didn't try to leave, I went inside and got the picture. "Here, take a look and tell me what you think," I said. He took the picture in his hands, and after looking at it for a few seconds his lips started to tremble, as if he were going to cry. He dropped the photo and almost fell to his knees. I helped him sit in his car. He started breathing heavy and I thought he was going to have a heart attack. I took the picture from the ground and tried to calm him down. I told him to relax and that he shouldn't get agitated. All of a sudden he just closed the door and took off. He went off, as we say in Puerto Rico, chillando gomas, burning rubber. I was left there with the picture in hand in the middle of a dirt cloud he lifted with his car. It was all very strange. Did he really not remember? Where would he go now? I trusted he would get over the shock and come back and talk about it. He didn't though. I waited for him the whole day in the tamarindo but he didn't show. The next day, the 8 after meeting Mrs. Matilda, no one else from the picture showed up. I decided that after work I would go look for Mr. Dono. God only knows what might have happened to him. I didn't find him anywhere in Carbirojo. As the days went by I was even more hopeful of meeting the 8th person that was with me in the projection room. That person didn't come but I was sure someone was coming to see me. A few days went by like that. After getting home from work I'd stay home waiting like a fool. I didn't know exactly how many days went by after the incident with Mr. Tonner but I decided it was time for all of us to meet. I had the phone numbers and addresses of 5 out the 7. How could I get in touch with Mr. Dono? That night I wrote a letter to Helena. I told her I wanted to see her and asked her to come by the house at a specific date so that she could meet the others and talk and get to know one another better. I would send the letter the next day and I'd call the rest of them that afternoon to inform them of the date and time they should come to my house. It didn't happen like that though. When I was about to head to my grandmother's house to call them, Maribel and Raoul showed up. It was a great surprise. I told them of what I was about to do and they told me about them wanting to come visit me out of the blue. We sat down and talked. They asked me about Mrs. Matilda and Oscar, if I had talked to them again. I told them I hadn't but that I was on my way to call them when they arrived. I have a surprise, or better yet, a few surprises for you. First of all, the day after you showed up a woman that was about 30 years old came to see me. She's a little different. Her name is Helena. They were both fascinated with Helena's story and were anxious to meet her. I told them I had to be on the day I specified on the letter. Now get ready for the big surprise, I said. I left them in the garage like two children waiting for their Christmas gifts. I came back with the picture in my hand and without saying a word I handed it to them. Their jaws dropped and their eyes opened as big as billiard balls. They couldn't believe it. The only thing that Maribel said was, "I came out so ugly, I hope you're not planning on publishing the photo in the magazine." Raoul got irritated and told her she didn't have to be so vain. She cleared it up and said she was only joking. "Where did you get this picture, Amori? Why didn't you show it to us the first time we came?" I then told them about Nereida. They both looked as astonished as I was when I first saw the picture. When I finished telling them about her and the picture, I told them that it would never be published. The photo was ours, it was our own private confirmation and it belonged to every one of us that was there and would also be used to identify the others that were kidnapped that night. I then proceeded to point out a heavy gentleman that was also in the picture. I told them that he had been here and when I finished telling them about him they both thought the same thing, where could we find him? I put the picture back in my hiding place in the house. It had gone dark and we were seated in the garage. When we decided to go call the others we heard a noise coming from the backyard. "What is that?" Dash asked Maribel. "I don't know, maybe it's one of my cats," I answered. Again we heard the noise. This time we all got up. Something heavy hit the ground. None of us moved. Our eyes were fixed on the backyard. Suddenly a strange figure started to appear. It looked like it had the head of a lion and the body of a human. It walked towards us. Maribel screamed and though I also wanted to scream I couldn't. Finally the figure came out of the dark and we could see it was Helena. When I saw her I was able to breathe again. Because Raoul and Maribel weren't acquainted with her they were still paralyzed and scared. Helena kept silent like a ghost. "This is Helena, the girl with the bicycle I told you about." Helena came up to me and gave me a hug. Maribel and Raoul were still in shock. After hugging me Helena turned around facing them. They looked as if they were studying each other. All of a sudden they just started laughing and Helena did the same. Then the three of them hugged. This made me want to cry but instead I started to laugh like crazy. I couldn't contain myself and now we all just looked like we had lost our minds. "That was quite a scare you gave us, Helena. What kind of hair is that? You look like a wild lioness." "It's a wig," she replied as she took the wig off and revealed her short hair, but this time it was red. Madonna was now gone, and I think that for the first time I saw Helena, the original Helena, the one in Neri Ida's picture. The three of them sat in the garage and I went inside to make lemonade. Maribel asked me to bring the photo to show it to Helena. When she saw it, she was unmoved, and the only thing she said was, "My family." That really got to me. To Helena, we're her real family. We accepted her just how she was. As far as we are concerned, she's not crazy. She's simply different. We were all talking and drinking our lemonade when Mrs. Matilda arrived. She was alone. Could what Helena said about hearing my calling be true? Mrs. Matilda was very nervous. I introduced her to everyone. The curious thing was that none of them shook hands. Instead, it was all hugs and kisses. Everything was happening too fast. I wasn't ready to have all these people. Besides sodas, lemonade, and hot dogs, I had nothing to prepare a dinner. I was planning on cooking a great meal for when we got together. They were fine with it, though. When Mrs. Matilda saw the picture, she almost fell backwards. She had to sit down. She asked all the questions we were asking as well. When did we take that, and who are the others? I pointed out Oscar, Neri Ida, and Mr. Dono. Absolutely no one said anything about individual in the center of the photograph. Everyone avoided talking about Amaran. Were we scared? I do not know, but a few times I was tempted to do it, but I stopped myself. Well, I told Mrs. Matilda about Neri Ida and her picture. Another car pulled up. It was Oscar, and a few minutes later Neri Ida arrived. It was as if I threw a party. Everyone took turns with the picture. They all talked amongst themselves and asked each other if they recognized any other person in the picture. Still there was no talk of Amaran. I knew we were all thinking about this enigmatic person, but no one spoke of him. One by one we all told how we were each kidnapped. While one person was talking, the others listened without so much as blinking. We found it strange that Neri Ida still couldn't remember. We tried everything to try and stimulate her memory, but then we all just figured it'd be best not to pressure her. Everything in its due time. When everyone had told their story, I asked, "How is it that all of you decided to come here at more or less the same time?" They all looked at each other quietly. "You, Mrs. Matilda, what brought you here?" "I don't know," she replied. "I spent the whole day thinking about you and wondering why you still hadn't called me, so I decided to come by." "And you, Oscar?" "Well, pretty much the same thing." Everyone had more or less the same thing to say. Helena was the only one that responded in a more mystical sort of way. According to her, she'd heard my calling. After she said this, everyone went silent. Oscar then asked about Mr. Dono. I told him that more than likely he would show up soon. I then asked something else. "So what do you all think of Amaran?" Again everyone went silent. "And? Is no one going to say anything? Nobody has anything to say about him?" "He is good," said Helena. "What else?" "All right, if no one wants to talk about him, then what do you think about the images he showed us?" "That they weren't real, though they seemed to be," said Raoul. About this we were all certain. We talked for a while about the different projections, and everyone presented their own point of view. There was one other thing we all agreed on: the images were so real you could almost touch them. I then asked them something that tormented me at times: where was this projection room? Was it in the ship on my pictures, or somewhere else? Underground maybe? Under the sea? None of us knew the answer to this. We all had theories, but nothing conclusive. Mr. Tono still hadn't arrived. I was worried about his health. I told the others that the last time I saw him he looked very frail and scared. "Why do you think they chose us?" Dash asked Neri Ida. Nobody of the others answered. I said that maybe it was all random, with no special consideration. To this question, if we had been chosen or not, we really couldn't find an answer that would settle the matter. If we had been chosen, then why were we so different? What were the criteria used by these people from another world to choose us? If it happened to be that all of us were blonde and blue-eyed, then maybe we could say that they chose us for those characteristics, but physically we were all different. We concluded that if we were indeed chosen, then there had to be a common factor amongst us. Maybe it was on an emotional or spiritual level. None of us knew for certain. There were still many mysteries before us. All we knew was that something beyond the reality we were used to happened to us. Now we couldn't visualize our routines or future the way we did before the experience. We can't see religions or philosophy the mundane way we used to. Our minds were now open to any possibility. Nothing now seems incredible. We thought it only a matter of time before things like our colonization of Mars or the establishment of a base on the moon started happening. For us now, anything a human being is capable of imagining he or she can do. We no longer ask, would science one day be able to? Yes, it can. A cork has been removed from our brains, the cork of a cosmic bottle of wine where anything is possible. We were no longer the same people. We had been born again. Though we didn't know if we had been chosen, we did know the alleged purpose. We each had a task, a job. But, what if we refused to carry that job out? They weren't negative assignments. Helping our planet is never negative. But there have been many times when I have wanted to give up all this. At times I've wanted my past ignorance back. In that moment I yearned for the days in which I lived in my own locked-up world with the comfortable reality I had become used to. But it was too late for that now. It's not easy, and I can't just close my eyes. If I knew that the house was going to burn to the ground, because of the way I am, I'd still go in and try to get everyone out and then would help them rebuild it. The ideal thing, however, would be to avoid the fire, but the owners wouldn't listen. It's not in my hands. Mr. Tonner didn't arrive that night as we had thought. It got late, so we decided to meet again on the date that I originally had picked. We said our goodbyes with a heavy heart. Helena went to get her bicycle, which she had left in the adjacent estate. I don't remember well, but one of the group took her on her bicycle home. When everyone left, I felt sad and alone. I sat on the hammock for a while to think. When I started falling asleep, I got up to go bed and looked at the chairs in my garage. Not counting the hammock, there were 8 chairs. Who was chair number 8 for? That night I managed to sleep well part of the night, until Christina woke me up with her barking. I sat on the bed and looked at the clock, which read 2:30 a.m., however, it was bright outside. Was it daytime? Maybe the clock had broken. From my bedroom window, which faced the backyard, I could see light. I was mourning. I turned on the clock's radio and went outside to see what was wrong with my dog. When I opened my bedroom door, I froze. From the windows on this side of the house, everything looked dark. I ran towards the living room, tripped, and hit my left hip with something. I cursed the pain and continued to the living room. It was like being in a dream. Through the windows that faced the street, I could see the closed restaurant and the dark sky. The lamppost was still on and it wasn't morning yet. What is this? What's going on here? Christina was still barking and running around the house. First I heard her barking on my right and then on my left. The panic was starting to surface. I wanted to get my dog to shut up, but I didn't know how. There I stood in the kitchen, too scared to go back to my room. Because I'd left my bedroom door open, you could see the room was illuminated. It looked as if the light was spreading now to the kitchen. Was I dreaming? I didn't think so. The radio was still on and the music was contributing to my panic. My hip still hurt a little and my dog went on with her racket, so it couldn't be a dream. I wish it was though. My head was spinning. I came up with a lot of theories in a matter of seconds. Maybe the owner of the estate next door was outside. Maybe someone had tried to steal one of his animals and he went outside to investigate. But, what kind of a flashlight was he using that was so potent? A fire then? But I didn't smell anything, there wasn't smoke and the light was uniform. I also noticed the light coming in from under the door that led to the stairs in the back. I was in a difficult situation. I wanted to run, but I was naked and was afraid to go into my bedroom where my clothes were. I swear if I'd at least had underwear on, I would have run outside. Unfortunately, I was used to sleeping in the nude and now I was in a jam. I made an effort move. The only thing I was able to do though was close all the kitchen and living room windows. I didn't even get close to the bedroom. Christina was still barking, and if I'd only had her in my arms, I would have made her shut up. Her ongoing riot had me even more nervous. After closing all the windows as fast as I could, I laid down on the living room sofa. I felt more naked than ever and didn't even have a blanket to throw over me. I felt like a trapped, cornered animal. The fear was boiling over. I didn't have a phone in my house. I thought that whatever was outside would come in any minute and take me. Because I had no neighbors near, nobody would hear. I thought that they were outside. I couldn't see them, but I knew they were there. I could see in my mind the little big-headed creatures with bulging eyes jumping around the house trying to get in. I really felt those creatures were repugnant. I even thought I heard the sound of someone trying to get in through one of the doors. I cried in the darkness, my little house. But silently. I didn't want them to hear me cry. Maybe they would think I wasn't there and leave. Nobody came in the house, and I didn't know exactly when the light went away. I woke up in the living room disoriented. What a nightmare, I thought. Then I paused for a second. Nightmare? If it were so, then why am I naked in the living room and with all the windows shut? I opened up the living room windows and it was day outside. The restaurant was open and the clock in the kitchen read 11:30 a.m. I went into the bathroom without even looking inside my bedroom. There was a small window in the bathroom, same as in my room, from where you could see the backyard. I saw that everything looked normal and in its place. Now that it was day, the whole thing seemed silly. The light must have been from that man checking on his kettle. I felt ashamed of myself for behaving so cowardly. I turned off the radio and started getting ready for work. I almost got the tamarindo at 1 p.m. because I spent a good deal of time inspecting the backyard. Needless to say, I found nothing strange. No footprints or evidence of any kind that something weird had happened. If only Christina could talk. I even checked her out but she looked the same as always. At the tamarindo, nothing had changed. Except for a few loyal clients, the rest were afraid to stop. The day came along when I had to pay the rent to the owner of the house, and I didn't have the money. Also, I had to make the payment for a loan I got from the bank. I would have to abandon the little house and move back in with Mama. That day, while I was getting ready to close up, a car drove up. Mr. Tono looked at me through the windshield but didn't get out of the car. I approached the car and said hi very politely. He didn't answer, and that made me feel a little uncomfortable. He then asked me, "Where did you get the picture?" I told him it was given to me by a lady called Neri Ida and that she was also in the picture with the group. Mr. Tonner then explained that he had managed to remember part of what had happened, but that it was still a little too hard to believe. I told him that six of the others had come by the house the night before and that we waited for him, but he never showed. He then immediately asked me, "How about him, Amaran? Have you seen him again?" His name, Mr. Tonner remembered his name. "I haven't. Mr. Tonner, in 3 days we're all going to meet again. Why don't you come?" "Let me think about it." He then took off without saying anything else. The day of the meeting came along, and I was desperate for it to be 9 o'clock already. Earlier that day though, I spent some time with Mama. Again, I wanted to tell her everything that was going on but didn't. She looked so happy and peaceful, and I didn't want to ruin that. I also wanted to call my friends to tell them about Neri Ida's picture and the others of the group, and about the incident with the strange light. Finally, I decided to call Mercedes, but she wasn't home. One of her daughters had answered the phone. Maybe it was better that way. I had given my word I wouldn't tell anyone about the picture. I said goodbye to Mama and headed home. To my surprise, when I got there, all their cars were parked outside. The only one I didn't see was Helena or her bicycle, but I had an idea of where she might be. The other one missing was Mr. Dono. I gave the key to Oscar and he opened the gate. We all left our cars outside and went in. After all the hugs and kisses, I went to the mango tree in the backyard and sure enough, Helena was up there. I told her everyone was here and then she came down. I asked her if by any chance she had come back to the house after she'd left the last time she was here. She said that she hadn't, and I, of course, believed her. I also had the intention of asking more or less the same thing to the owner of the estate next to the house. We both went back inside and joined the others. They'd all brought vegetables and tubers as gifts.